Up next, WLOC correspondent Steve Pierce interviews Sandra Steingraber, a scientist and activist from the Ithaca area who helped lead the successful fight to ban high-volume fracking of natural gas in New York State. A new documentary film about Sandra's role in that struggle will make its international premiere this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. at the IFC Film Center near Washington Park in New York City.
We're speaking with Sandra Steingraber, who's the subject of a new film out called Unfractured. Welcome to WOOC, Sandra.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about this film?
So Unfractured tells our triumphant story here in New York of how we built a social movement to carry the science on the risks and harms of fracking into the governor, into our decision makers and policy makers and the health commissioner, and ultimately we became David versus Goliath. We built a slingshot made of, as I say in the film, love, science, and grassroots political power, and we slew the David, we slew the Goliath of the gas industry and achieved a statewide fracking ban. So unfractured means that the bedrock of New York is unfractured. At the same time, as the camera was following me through the many years of that struggle, my family began to suffer. My husband had a series of strokes, and so then that became part of the story. And so I felt fracture lines and felt that I was pulled apart, but ultimately I think came through it unfractured.
So this film is about to be released. What's the trajectory that it's on?
It is. It had its world premiere in Toronto at a film festival there. I was lucky to be able to travel there to be at the very first screening with the filmmaker. And it was pretty amazing experience both to watch our story, our New York story, you know, live on the big screen, but also to see people's response, even Canadians, who are not so demonstrative, at least that's how I see it as a New Yorker. And yet people were weeping in the audience and cheering for the happy parts. And of course it does have a happy ending. And then it won an award. It won actually the best feature film of the festival. So it will now come to New York City this Saturday at the Doc NYC Film Festival for its U.S. premiere, and it feels great. It feels like coming, you know, having this great experience internationally and now bringing it home to the people whose story it tells, many of whom are in the film itself, right?
So I assume you're going to be at the premiere this weekend.
Yeah, I'm traveling from my home in Trumansburg, New York, to the city, and bringing my 16-year-old son with me through all the years of having cameras in our home and following us wherever we went. My son is actually now interested in a career in filmmaking.
Excellent. And for folks who don't make it to the screening this weekend, do they yet have a release in mind? Is this you're still in the midst of all the negotiations to figure out what kind of release is possible?
Well, I'm a biologist and an author, and to me, the way films are rolled out is really mysterious. So I believe the film Unfractured will have a life in the film festival circuit for a while and hopefully maybe pick up a few more awards. And then after that, it goes on a theater run. Broadcast follows. I have worked with a filmmaker on one other film, very different kind of film. She brought one of my books on environmental health and turned it into a documentary. That film was called Living Downstream, and that's kind of how it went. Films kind of get teased out through the film festival circuit before they become publicly available. That film was very different because as a film adaptation of one of my books, I was actually a consultant on the film as well as its subject and participated in writing the screenplay, whereas this film, we didn't know how the story was going to end, right? We didn't. The camera simply followed activists and scientists around as we began to organize and as we began to make our case. So it's called Cinema Verite.
So one of my graduate school advisors once told me I was involved in a local environmental struggle, which was about mining. And it seemed that every time we successfully fought off a Hard Rock mining proposal, this is out in Rensselaer County where a lot of our listeners are, every time we won a struggle against a particular mine, it would come back again after 10 years with a different owner or a different location. And it just seemed that it was never ending, that the folks around where I live are professional activists. They have to be because there's no security unless the people who live there take a real active role. And my advisor said, well, that's because in the environmental movement, every victory is temporary and every defeat is permanent. And I thought, wow, that's depressing. But it comes to mind with this story because I wonder, is the fracking fight over in New York State, or are we just are we dependent on environmental minutemen and women who are out ready at any moment to take up the fight again?
Great question. Well, the fracking fight in New York did result in a durable statewide fracking ban. Of course, things can always be overturned. We could decide to allow smoking on airplanes again, right? But at some point, that becomes culturally kind of unthinkable. And so I think where we're at in history right now, and I think the New York fracking ban story is on the cusp of this paradigm shift where for 150 years we ran our economy on digging up fossilized corpses out of the bedrock and lighting them on fire. And that is coming to an end now. In the same way the rotary dial phone gave way to these iPhones that we carry around in our pocket that we couldn't have imagined, and a very new kind of energy system where we look up instead of down for energy to wind, water, and solar is at hand. But the old fossil fuel industry is not exiting the stage voluntarily. And so there's a battle between the past and the future that's being played out. And it was played out right here in New York. It's also being played out in other states. But the victory that we had here is durable, but also is inspiring fracking bans. You know, since we succeeded here, we shared our data with our compatriots in Ireland and Scotland, and they both have fracking bans now. There are 5 counties in California that do. Many counties in Colorado have followed. The state of Maryland now has a fracking ban. And so where I sit, things are beginning to shift. So it's not always that every battle is a temporary victory. Enough battles with temporary victories begin to turn the tide of history in a completely different direction. And that's what I think this film captures. But there's another story woven into and kind of braided into the fracking ban story in the film Unfractured, and that is another battle that I threw my heart and soul into, which is the battle to protect Seneca Lake from the storage of fracked gas. Seneca Lake is a place of great beauty. It's a source of drinking water for 100,000 people. It's the heart of New York's wine-growing region. It's where I live. And of course, wineries are the kind of goose that lays the golden egg around here. And it's made possible because of the vast amount of water held within Seneca Lake. It actually modulates not only the temperature by retaining so much heat, but also because it reflects light. It bounces light on the hillsides in a way that makes wine grapes thrive that where they can't in other places up north. So meanwhile, then, a Houston-based company, Crestwood, has purchased 5 miles of prime lakeshore property, not because it loves the view, but rather because there are these ancient, crumbly salt caverns left over from a century of salt mining operations, and it just wants to use those as kind of free gas tanks to store fracked gas that is blasted out of other states' bedrock and stored here and then put in pipelines and pressurized with compressor stations and taken to burner tips on the eastern seaboard or for export. None of that gas would be for us. And so the fight against using Seneca Lake as a storage depot for fracking is another battle that is another story that's woven into this larger story. And that is a story that's not over yet. There were more than 650 arrests for peaceful civil disobedience. I was one. The movie documents me going to jail and leaving my family and becoming incarcerated for 8 or 9 days. And other people follow my footsteps. And we did succeed through not only through those actions, but through the Wine Business Coalition and all kinds of other elected officials citing petitions and municipalities opposing this. So through a whole variety of tactics, we succeeded in stopping the expansion of methane storage. But the question about whether we'll store propane in those caverns is still out there, and that's for our New York Department of Environmental Conservation and the governor to make a decision on. So the film tells part of the story, but part of that story is still unfinished.
Well, we're just about out of time. I think folks in this region will be very excited to see the film because we're at the receiving end of some of this very infrastructure you're talking about. Albany suddenly, out of nowhere, has become a center for transportation of gas on these rail cars, and they're reindustrializing, they're proposing the reindustrialization of the Hudson River to move it south. So all of us have some stake in the struggle. So it'll be interesting and exciting to see your story, and it's good to know that that it continues on a certain level, because I'm sure it's a way of exercising power and strength and your citizenship to be involved in these decisions rather than to just allow them passively to wash over you.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm a biologist and I study environmental health, so I have the privilege of knowing a lot of things about the risks and harms of particular kinds of chemicals, how people are exposed, what air pollution does to pregnancy, how it contributes to stroke risk, how it impacts menstrual cycling. And so to my way of thinking, with that privilege and with that knowledge comes a solemn responsibility to save and protect lives based on what I know. And in fact, I feel as a parent, it's my job to protect my children from harm and plan for their future, which I can't do if climate destabilizing gases are continuing to be pumped into our atmosphere. And yet the battles that I fight necessarily absent me from my children. So that's kind of the crux of the conflict that you see played out. Me, kind of a shy, nerdy biologist, having to become outspoken and have a public voice and leave my children behind, and even though their father's disabled. So I think that's a struggle that I'm hoping... I'm kind of an every person, right, who had to rise to the historical moment and do what this moment in history requires us to do. And I think that other people throughout history, whether they were members of the French Resistance or abolitionists or women suffragettes, no matter what their personalities were or how many kids they had at home, and they had to make similar decisions. And they must also have felt that they were just winning tiny temporary victories and having suffering terrible setbacks. But eventually, we did abolish slavery. We did win the right to vote, right? Things, as Martin Luther King Jr. reminds us, the arc of history does bend toward justice, but you have to pull it really, really hard and be unrelenting.
Well, that's a great place to leave it. Thank you so much, Sandra. We're looking forward to seeing the film, if not this weekend in New York City at the festival. I'm sure it'll be out and about the Capital Region. It's called Unfractured, and you can go to unfractured.com to find out more about it. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.